This episode is brought to you in part by Wholehearted Love, a new book by Caleb and Stephanie Rouse. Overcome the barriers that hold you back in your relationships with God and with others, and delight in feeling safe, seen, and loved with Wholehearted Love. For more information, go to Tyndale.com.
You're listening to the Enneagram and Marriage Podcast. I'm your host, Krista Harden, and I'm so glad you showed up for our relationship chat today, as well as for you and your people. We're all about living intentionally here so you can experience joy and balance in your relationships once again or for the very first time. Be sure you hang with us on our social media platforms, and if you like research like I do, make sure you check out our website at enneagramandmarriage.com for our weekly newsletter, freebies, and so much more, as well as at Instagram and Facebook. We have so many goodies to share with you. Let's dive right in together. Hello, and thank you so much for joining us for another Enneagram and Marriage podcast. Today, we're talking about sharing your light in a dark world, and I'm so glad we get to do this through the lens of the beautiful novel and Netflix portrayal of All the Light We Cannot See by Anthony Doerr. I'm joined by Wes Harden, who is my husband and who also felt a profound effect of watching this series after I explained the book and the series to him. So we watched it together a second time and his first time, and it was such a great gift to sit through and watch somebody who was trying so hard to be brave and strong during the worst of times. And maybe you feel in your life right now that it's a very hard time and you need encouragement. And today's episode is frankly that, to remind you of what is good, true, and beautiful, to set you straight back on track and to do that with you, right? Because I'm doing that same journey. But before we get to that, if you need the help in your marriage, don't forget the Ennea Summit is coming up March 5th through 7th. It's a free summit. It is in the show notes. And of course, you can do the upgraded paid option for the All Access Pass as well. But what the event is a conference that's virtual for you to process through all of the different pieces of your relationship, whether you're bored or lonely or just having so much conflict right now. And all these Enneagram teachers, myself included, have come together to share our expertise. So I am grateful to be joined by therapist Ashton Whitmire Ober, Sarah Jane Case, we have Suzanne Stabile, we have Jesse Eubanks, we have the wonderful Elizabeth Bennett, the type four we had on our show here. And we also have so many other speakers as well, including Tyler Zack and Jackie Brewster and just Danny Cooper, you name it. If they've been on this show and they're an Enneagram expert, it's almost certain that they're going to be attending or in most cases speaking. So I hope you can join. And like I said, just come for free and sign up now so you don't forget and you can get all the news. Or make sure you get the All Access Pass so you can get our bonuses and PDFs and all the things we like to do extra for those who are like, I need more of a plan. So grateful. And know that as we try to share our lights and hope to share our lights, that one of the best ways we can do that is through this lens of saying, let's work directly so that if I'm with a peacemaker and I'm a protector, or I'm an introvert who also tends to be a type two, but I'm self-pres, we can work with these different nuanced pieces and truly have a puzzle that now fits better. So as we're trying to figure out how to shine your light, don't forget to do that together. And that's all, again, March 5th through 7th. Find it in the show notes. Now, as we get started talking about relationships and shining our lights together, I thought it would be really cool to go over first just the ways that I see the big picture of the story, because some of you haven't seen All the Light We Cannot See. So I'm just going to give you a big picture view, and then we'll get into the nitty gritty with Wes. But the big picture view is that we're set in Saint-Malo, France, as well as some time in Paris and in a factory town in Germany, all around the 1940s or so, of just the early 1940s. And then around 1944 as the war was ending. And we're set in all these different spaces with two protagonists taking each chapter. We have Marie Laure, a young French woman who's blind. And then we also have Werner, who is a young boy in the German Hitler Youth, and we have both of them sharing the tragedies of just life in this horrible time in history. And each of them has a story where, unfortunately, Werner is choosing to pursue his career, and he's coming from a foster home, and he's like, I have to achieve. And everyone is so proud of him in Germany that he's now making a name for himself. And we also have Marie Laure, this young French woman, and her father, and her uncle, and her great aunt, who are working with the French resistance and trying to make sure that they do anything and everything to stop the evils. So, as you can see, we have somebody completely under the influence of unhealthy social psychology, Werner, and then somebody else who's able to say, okay, this is really tempting. We could just go with the enemy here, or we could rise up and do what's right. And there were so many people, guys, in this time period who did this. And one of my favorite books is The Hiding Place with Corrie Ten Boom. And oh my goodness, there's so many other great books that I have enjoyed. My brother and I share them sometimes, and he loves The Tattooist of Auschwitz. And I really have a lot of favorites. So if you ever want to trade favorite World War II books with me, you can. But this one is such a special story because I feel we don't often get to hear from somebody who is taken in by the Hitler Youth. And I actually think that Werner's story is my favorite of all. It is so tragic and sad to see somebody get taken in by evil and to become corrupt, and then to find the light that most of us, hope to see, and of course, in times like this, you don't even know that he'll ever see it, and to watch him walk through these dark, dark times, and to come to find that light, and to come to find choice. It is so beautiful to watch and also so tragic. So that is all the good things of the Enneagram 4 space. If you're a 4, you're probably fawning with me now and maybe have already seen it, or like, I absolutely have to read this or watch it. I will agree with you. If you have any 4 in you, you absolutely have to. France is a very decadent type 4 nation, and this story is set there, and you're going to love it. But if not, it might be a great stretch for you anyway, because yes, Wes has an arrow to 4, but he isn't a 4. He doesn't have a 4 wing, and he loved it too, and it taught him things too. So I really want to encourage you to check this story out. As you can imagine, it also has these little pieces to make it more thrilling, like a Lord of the Rings-ish sort of jewel that's got to be returned and gets thrown into the ocean at the end. And I had done a little research and saw that Anthony Doerr had some of his notes from his earliest days of fantasy were from C.S. Lewis. And so I can see that element, and I'm like, wait, what is that all about? But it doesn't detract from the beautiful main point, which is you feel like you're small sometimes. You feel like what you have doesn't matter, but it does. And so I just want you to know that please keep doing the good things. Please know that even if it feels insignificant or that you're humble or that nobody cares about your gifts, they do, and you matter. And that's the whole point of this whole series, was to let people know that every single life, however humble it is, has meaning. And the blind girl being the protagonist, whom everyone comes to life to protect, is evidence of that. So never feel like you're not enough. And I know my second life verse is 2 Corinthians 12, 9, about how our weak in our weaknesses, God's power is just seen. And you could just see that thread here so much when we allow ourselves to just admit, here's what I'm bad at, here's what I'm good at, and how we need a collective of everybody with our gifts so that no one is above each other, and we just show love and grace as we continue to pursue goodness, even in the face of death and evil. So let's talk to Wes about these concepts and more, and even have some fun with typing main characters now. Hey, I'm so happy to have you on the podcast today, Wes.
Me too. It's good to be back.
Yes, I am so happy we get to talk about this amazing series and book today.
It was
Oh,
amazing.
yes. And before we get to that, I had such a fun Valentine's with you at Pure Bar, especially. I told this
Pure
audience.
torture is more like it.
A dad joke. You're
It
so cute.
was terrible, but it felt so good afterwards. We felt really alive and it was really a fun time. So unique, you know.
That's what I
Definitely won't forget it.
love. Yes. And that's what I always want everyone here to hear. That sexual instinct is so important for shaking things up. You just have to move things around in your marriage, and it just brings life. It's a creative sort of life energy that you get from moving things around in your marriage. So thank you.
Thank you for
Literally moving things around.
yeah. constantly thinking of new crazy fun things for us to do together. So,
Yes, I
yeah.
don't like to get bored. And so it meant the world to me that you did that. And also that you, I mean, I don't have it need for it to be physical like that. Like it was so fun that you said on one of our date nights that you would walk through this book and series with me.
Yeah, well, I first sat through you telling me the entire story as we ate at this. We were at this French cafe around here. It's like authentic, like you're in Paris. This restaurant is so cool
So good.
with this live accordion music playing and all these people talking, speaking French around us and stuff. And so you're like, I gotta tell you about this story I'm reading right now. And so I heard the whole thing and I'm like, that actually sounds really good. So then you wanted to show me the series.
Yes, and I
So you
really,
wouldn't read the book.
yes, I and he did read some
I
of the
don't give
book
myself
with
permission to
me.
do that,
No,
unfortunately.
on the date night, I was just like, at this point, like talking is over. We press play on the audiobook, and you were like, okay. So, but like you said, you don't have the time to go through it all.
Yeah, we went out for ice cream after at
yeah.
Jenny's Ice Cream, and you showed me the first chapter, and I was just all in. Like,
Yes.
this is really quality.
Yes. And I really wanted to share it here because if you haven't heard of this series, then it's a really good one for you and your partner to enjoy together on Netflix. And the music is cinematic.
Oh,
And
it's fantastic. The whole thing's a
yes, the
masterpiece.
photography. I love Mark Ruffalo as an actor. And then other actors were new to me, but he's one of my favorite actors anyway. So I was like, all right, I can trust this cast. This is going to
Yeah.
be good.
Ooh, just so moving. So moving. So such a beautiful message and just a beautiful artistic piece. Like the cinematography is just unbelievable and really well written, right? You know, just thought out all this symbolism. The theme is just amazing. So took like what, 4 hours? Like they're like hour-long episodes or something close to it.
Yes, exactly. So we are ready for you to now jump into some questions with us. So thank you,
All
Wes.
right, let's do
And
it.
thank you guys for doing this with us. We'll type a few of the main characters at the end for those who are also watching with us or going to read with us. So the first
Is
question
this
I.
set to 1310? We want to make sure it's set to
Oh my gosh. Yep, that's the radio
1310.
station frequency on the show and in the book. So anyway, oh my gosh, I've already given you guys the preview for it before we came on. But Wes, I want to talk to you about because it's so profound. I think as the title says, all the light we cannot see, it really applies to all the good
So
acts we do
much.
in our lives, and how when we do those good acts, as even little as they are, I know author Anthony Doerr wanted us to know they matter.
They do.
Now we know that this whole story, just as the title would help us to see, is all about the good deeds and the ways that we can help people if we just do the right thing, even though we're in a world of darkness. So, how does that impact you when you hear that title, when you think about meaning?
It's just such a clever title and so rich. And of course, there's so many different ways that it's expressed in the movie. I love the idea of, you know, light being like a way of expressing the good deeds that we do, like our lives. You know, Jesus says, let your light so shine before men. You know, don't hide it under a bushel basket. Let it be like a city on a hill. And so in this movie, or I'm sorry, in this series, you see a lot of different people who are shining their light in their own ways. They're glowing in their own ways, you know. Some of them more obvious than others, some of them more visible than others. And the main character is this girl who is not able to see light, like visible light, because she's blind, but yet she knows a lot about the goodness in the world and the light in the world. And so she shares that. She shares her light, even though she's not able to be seen by a lot of people because she's literally hiding out in this house up in the attic, essentially, hiding behind this radio. And she does these things that are literally saving so many lives and protecting the most precious treasure in all of France. And she's this unsuspecting little thing that nobody can see, you know? It's such a clever idea. Bakers and these old women, old men who are just like people who nobody suspects are capable of doing much in terms of the war, but they are making really important contributions. They're really doing some things that are really powerful. And so they're letting their light shine in their own way, even though you can't really see them. They're behind the scenes.
Yes.
In terms of their communities and stuff, they're doing things they're hiding, they're doing things in secret with codes and passing messages and loaves of bread and, stuff like that. So in that way, you see a lot of examples of people sharing their light, letting their light so shine, but in a way that a lot of people can't see.
Mm-hmm.
So that was an example.
Yeah, that's a really good example because we really notice together that sometimes we think as a society that people who don't contribute as much in the same traditional ways others do that are maybe younger or more able don't contribute. And instead here you find purpose in serving those, but also that everyone has purpose. Everybody has a gift.
Everyone.
Even if they're helpless, it's a gift for somebody else to be able to serve with them. Honestly, we know that from volunteer research. So I found that to be one of the other ironies while we're juxtaposing that with the Nazis saying, meanwhile, you better be perfect, even to their own Hitler youth. Or you're getting killed or beaten up so badly to a pulp as some of the kids happened to them who were part of the Hitler youth.
Brutal. Yeah, it's kind of graphic. If you haven't seen it, if you're not comfortable with that kind of thing, just be warned. It's realistic. They're trying to be realistic, and it is.
Yeah.
It's not like gratuitous stuff, but it's there, And there's this scene where when the Gestapo come. And they are checking out Daniel LeBlanc because they see him, pacing the street, counting the steps, and they think he might be working for the resistance. Or they tell them, why the heck are you counting your steps? Are you working for the resistance? He's like, no, I'm building this model of the city so that my daughter can learn her way around. And so they want to prove, oh, really? Is she really blind? And they're like so mean to her. It's so sad. They say something like, well, sorry about your loss, that she's cursed with this blindness. And he's like, no. It's not a curse. It's a blessing. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And he really helps her to believe that about herself and show her all the things that she can do, that she's able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said before, it becomes a great blessing because no one would ever suspect her because she's blind.
Mm-hmm.
And she's able to use this braille, which the soldiers can't understand, but she can. And, it's really amazing how, here's another example how God uses the weak in this world, to what some people might think are the foolish or the simple to confound the wise and the strong, it's really a beautiful example. It's awesome.
It is. Yeah. It's a beautiful portrayal of that. And I'm so glad you caught that and had some different even thoughts about that afterwards, because it's the kind of, piece that you will also have a sense of just, this is lasting. This is going to make me dig deeper.
Chew on it. When we watch a movie or a TV show, I chew on it for like days. I just will think about it on my commute and stuff. And
yes.
One of the things that came to mind is the way she is using the radio. Mm-hmm. Well, first the radio blessed her and Wernig and did I say his name right?
Werner.
Yeah. The professor. Wernig. Yeah.
Wernie.
Whatever. So the professor reaches both of them with the radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets to use that same radio to reach out.
Mm-hmm.
To speak out and share light with whoever happens to be listening.
Mm-hmm.
And, radio waves are actually part of the electromagnetic spectrum.
Yes, I was going to ask you that question too, because I wanted you to talk to us about that, because that was what first got me as I was studying physics. I think I shared it on this podcast before with Jack, but I was sharing with my son about the electromagnetic spectrum, and they were like, "Oh, there's so much light we can't see." And then I'm like, "All the light we can't see."
Yeah.
So tell us about that. Yeah. Much better with this topic.
Dude, I geeked out on that when I was thinking about it. So it's, there's radiation is electromagnetic energy, and it has a whole wide spectrum. So it goes from, they range based on the size of their wavelength, So radio waves are huge, giant waves. Some of the waves are literally hundreds of meters long in terms of the wavelength, And those are the kinds of waves they were probably using back then in the old days.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have smaller and smaller, like we use for FM radio, and then it goes to like infrared, and then red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, like the color spectrum is really tiny, narrow band. And then there's violet, and then ultraviolet, which is like radiation. And then beyond that, other forms of radiation, like X-rays and gamma rays, which are super tiny and super high radiation, But all of those are essentially light. They're all forms of light. We only see a really tiny, tiny narrow band in the whole spectrum. All the rest is invisible to us, but it is light that we cannot see. And the radio waves were light that no one could see, but that was being used to move the whole story along. Everything was around that. It's such a really awesome idea.
Yeah, and also the fact that communications like we're doing now can make a difference. All these places where we can give hope to each other. So keep listening to the things that serve you in the way that will help you to serve others. Not just serve you, but help you to serve others. You might feel like you're in a big machine this year with all of the elections, but the truth is there are little pieces of light. And I know that's what Anthony Doerr wanted from the book, is he's like, I want every life to matter, and they do matter. And each one, however humble it is, he said, it matters. And that is just a beautiful message we can bring to our marriages. And we're going to talk more about that on Wednesday. We're going to talk about bringing humility into marriage, because I think that's a very big key for how we can get along better as couples. Werner talks about shame. The German Hitler youth, who is the male protagonist in a way. Werner wanted to be a scientist more than anything else. And later he said, ambition and shame can become inextricably linked in relationship if we forget people in the process.
Yeah, I think when you think of ambition, like it's a selfish goal, selfish ambition is what comes to mind. Like some ambition is good if you're trying to move up so that you can provide better for your family or something. But if you are stepping on people to get up to the top, that's not good. Then it's shameful when you are pursuing your goals to the detriment of others, like regardless of how it affects others. Using others to get there, then you're being shameful, and I think that's what he's talking about. They're one and the same when you try to pursue it in the wrong way. The ends don't justify the means, might be another way to put it.
Yeah, that reminds me of the Good Samaritan story where somebody's too busy in their ambition, whatever it is, to see the problem right before them. And just that's one of many examples that we can use of like, okay, social groupthink can take over. And, we know from psychological studies and social psychology that the more people that there are to disperse blame, the less likely we feel personally responsible to help. And I think this story reminds us of that with what happened to our world in World War II, that it was like, they're not my problem.
A lot of the evils that came out of World War II, we can see now looking back, were because people were having selfish ambition, maybe even with things that are socially acceptable. Like, I don't want to sacrifice, being embarrassed by standing up and saying I don't agree with this or that. And so if good men do nothing, then evil gets to win, and evil will take over and conquer. And so maybe that was another way he was saying it, is that if we don't stop and think about who's affected by this, even like you said, the Good Samaritan, who's being affected by me not taking notice of them because I'm pursuing my ambition,
And I would imagine you see that a lot in your work with the elderly as well. Just it's all over in different cultures, different people groups, that there's so many people that are not seen. And I think we all have to be mindful of how we leave some margin in our lives to do something.
Yeah, like with respect to medicine, like you said, I definitely see that with I take care of mostly elderly patients in family practice. And so I have so many coming in after going to the emergency room or to see a specialist. And so many of them, they didn't get a lot of good attention. They didn't get a very thorough workup or treatment plan. They were just kind of like checked out really quick and then dismissed as soon as possible. And I'm not saying anything against people who work in emergency rooms because they're amazing. They're heroes. everybody's different, you know, not every single provider you see is going to take the time to give you the very best care that you deserve. And I'm just saying statistically, like if the older you are, the older that a person is, like if somebody's in their late 80s, it seems like sometimes they're looked at like, well, there's not a lot at risk here. I probably have a very low risk of getting sued. If something happened to this person, they're already about to die anyways. Mm-hmm. So we'll just do, you know, the bare minimum and get going. You know, that kind of a, without thinking about seeing every single person as made in the image of God and therefore worthy of our very best every single time.
Yes. And I know you do that. You often
certainly try.
That. And sometimes on our walks, it's so precious. You'll be like crying, near crying, because you care so much about
that
these elderly.
Not to be shared.
No, but seriously, I love that about him, where he's actually so seriously caring about
really
these super
cases,
elderly
really
people that you're like, I want them to get the best care.
Well, some of them are like my grandmas and grandpas. It's like, I've been seeing these people for almost 10 years.
Yeah, it's so hard.
Every month or so, and you get really close.
Yeah,
you know, it's a very great privilege to be let into their lives like that. I have like hundreds of grandmas and grandpas, and I love that about my job.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah.
And I know a lot of ER docs feel that way too. So.
Oh, of course. You were just saying that's one example where it could be seen, and you have seen it happen.
Yes.
Reality is
real.
We've seen it. Another place I saw it was with, I often take time to go through my parents' dialogues. And I shared on my Substack a poem written by my dad last week. But what I didn't share, there's so much. It's so overwhelming to know how and when and what to share. But my mom wrote this piece on her mental health stay. And it was so bad because she's like, all the orderlies, if they took a liking to you, you might have gotten a little attention. But she was thrown in a room, naked, in isolation. It was so dehumanizing. And 7 years later, she was writing an essay for me to share. It wasn't like a journal. It was, this is my treatment that she'd sent in to try to get maybe even published. I don't know, but she was clearly writing it out and typing it out so that we would all see it. And so that's why I'm sharing it. She was like, I don't have my self-esteem back after 7 years because they took such from me. So I think it's a reminder for all of us, like group effect is very, very real.
Yeah.
And we have to be aware of it.
You know, we're all, if we're honest, we're all capable of becoming monsters like those soldiers in the Gestapo were, God forbid. But if we allowed ourselves to go down that track for long enough, you know, it's that potential's in there. But and we have to work hard to prevent even the inkling, even the slightest hint of that kind of, you know, apathy and neglect and, you know, blindness to the light that those people carry. You know, that every single person you encounter carries to have eyes that see that and to be strengthening that in yourself so that you know, we can prevent anything like that from ever happening again.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And I really, I know everyone listening is remarking with us about stories that you have in your life when you've seen it happen or you've gotten too busy. And so we're all reminded together about not missing the light that we can bring, not missing the light we can see in others, even if we've at times thought that they might not have much worth, just being reminded everyone has worth. Everyone is part of the story.
Yeah.
And this includes your spouse. Oddly enough, this is often the place where we discard it the most. But let me ask
you. There's a light there, even if you don't feel like you can see it.
Right? And that's why I stick around for Wednesday as I talk about humility in marriage and why that's so important. But on our last big question before we get to just super quick typing, because it's not really about Enneagram typing today, but we did want to type a few little ideas
for
personality. But final theme that I really wanted to talk about today is in the book and the show, they talk about how Jules Verne's 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea is the book that she's reading to hide codes in. And it certainly has a lot to do with the setting of San Malo. Just they're always at the ocean where the book is set as well. And there's secret codes being passed, just like these underwater emissions in Jules Verne, which was a book that I read years back, if you remember. And I think you did well. But I guess I wondered, when we hear from Anthony Doerr about why he added this in, he says it's because this was her escape. And reading this book was her escape during a terrible time. And a lot of people love to read. Others chose music. Sometimes it lulled them in bad ways where they just listened to music and it dulled them away from what was important. So I was going to ask you, what do you feel like is helpful for you and maybe others, like your patients you've recommended, when they're going through something stressful and you don't want to dull them away from caring?
Yeah, no, that's really good. That's good. You know, what's so funny is I just thought of this while you were talking about it, that when the pandemic hit, and we were all forced to isolate at home and everything was shut down, I read Jules Verne's Around the World in 80
That's
Days because I was like,
funny.
I'm not able to go out and travel anywhere. You know, we're all forced to stay home. So I'm going to
Yeah.
travel around the world with Jules Verne. And it was a really
Oh.
fun,
Yeah.
book. It's really a good book. And then I got to watch the movie afterwards with Jackie Chan.
Oh my gosh, I'm sure that was funny.
Yeah, but yeah, reading is such a great escape, such a great stress reliever. Oh,
Yes.
definitely. For me myself, I mean, we really love outdoor stuff, and I love to go hiking. I love being out in the mountains. I love it. I love being in the woods, in trails. And so we try to schedule that into our lives, like, 3 to 4 times a year if possible. And we go out west or we go up north or something, and we try to find some cool place to go hiking. And so part of the escape day to day, since I'm not able to do that every day, is just thinking about it. You know, honestly, I have a Pandora playlist of songs that are about being out west or about hiking or about being, out camping. And we listen to them when we go out west and stuff like that, the same songs. And so when I, you know how music's so powerful, it just transports you. That was in the movie too. Claire de Lune, that amazing, beautiful piece, was a way that they escaped.
Yes.
When there was chaos around them during the war, they would close their eyes with their headphones on and listen to that amazing song. And so I think that's one of the ways I escape day to day. Like when I'm at work, I have, very busy schedule, sometimes very tough patients. And when I'm sitting in there charting, I have my phone, with music playing, and on will come,
Sure, Gregory Allen
Alan
Isakov.
Isakov and
Yay.
Lord Huron and these other ones that make me think about being out west. And so it helps me to escape.
That's cool.
Yeah,
I
just
love
gives me that
that.
feeling, like I
Yes.
could just close my eyes and picture the Grand Tetons and, being in Yellowstone and stuff.
Oh, that's
Oh, it's
awesome.
great.
I love that you use
Yeah.
imagery, and I think that really
Yeah.
helps you as a very you're a very visual type.
Yeah.
So that's so cool.
I love it. I need
You
it.
do. I need more like mental. And I need the visual too. I don't get away as much as you do to vacation, but I do like our trips every year. And then I also love my woods out in the backyard. So I love to we picked a home that had woods near it because that's so big for us.
Yeah.
Especially me. He likes the straight path, as I've talked about. That sounds bad. I like the
Because it's
straight path
right and good.
too. But I like the woods. They're messy. They're unpredictable.
Yes, I
And
like it too.
Hannah's always like, Mom, like the other day I was jogging in the woods and she's like, Where are you? And I was like, In the woods jogging. And she was like, Are you home yet? And I'm like, No, get off the call. Like, because I think I need that release sometimes just to get
Yeah,
away from it
right.
all.
Oh,
So I think everyone has to find their way
got it.
out to get back in for a bit. And I did see the characters, even the protagonists, trying to do that. And I think that France is a very decadent nation. And so that was part of the messaging I took from the book. If we were to give an archetype, and I hear this said sometimes of France, that it was a very boorish nation. So there, were always moments for trying to still hit up the bakery or have delicious omelets and
Prioritize
really
that. Yeah, you
prioritize
see that in the
quality.
series. Yep.
Yeah, of relationships, of food, of experiences.
Remember that line when the sister says to the brother, she says, "Don't you want to live before you die?" Remember that?
Yes, my neck.
He had been like agoraphobic for 20 years, just sitting in the house, this guy who had PTSD from war, World War I. And so she's trying to get him to go out, go to the ocean, go see it, go to the bakery again. You've been holed up in here for all this time. And so the girl, she convinces him finally to go, and it's a really beautiful thing. But that's an example. It's like even no matter how bad it is, no matter how hellish, your life might be, you gotta find, even if it's the smallest, simplest thing, that you can just focus on, savor and enjoy just for a little piece of sanity. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Something that's not going to be too unhealthy for you, but that is just a little tiny slice of heaven, to get you by. While you're going through hell. And I think we all really need to fight for that. They did that well in the series. And we should do that for each other as couples. You know, sometimes you're going through a whole lot more than I am, and vice versa. And we need to help each other, maybe help each other to see the light better that we aren't seeing.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
You know?
And we need community when we're not seeing it together, because sometimes that's when I think couples and marriages break down. And we've just heard about two different ones in our small circle of couple marriages breaking down. And I think that that happens all the time throughout our, you know, if you've been married any number of years, you've seen some of your couple friends not make it. And I don't want to have any judgment toward them. I just want to say, I think sometimes, you know, we're good at picking one another up when the one falls down. But I think when we both hit it together, we have to have community help us. So that's important
that's
for all of us.
Yeah.
And that's why I do this podcast. That's why you are so social with friendships.
Yeah, I got a lot of friends. We're really active in our church. I have a small group I'm part of. And it's really important to build community, you know, people who are like-minded, who are positive, who are going to bring you up, keep lifting you up even when you're down. Yeah, I know. I got a buddy who just reached out by text this morning. They're really having a hard time in their marriage. And so we're going to have breakfast. We're going to lift each other up.
That's
and I'm going to try to help him to see some of the light that he cannot see right now. You know, try to point it out to him.
Yes, that's so good.
Yeah.
But that's one of the pieces. That's one of the layers of a good, healthy support system is when you're both down, you need people to help you back up. But lastly, there's one more piece before we get into the typing. Sometimes it's like the one thing you have left is your freedom to choose whether you'll love somebody or be selfish and get out of pain. And I know that as a seven, of course, that's something sevens sort of try to avoid. And I think that one of my favorite parts of the book was when her father was, spoiler, being tortured. They said, you know, the Nazi over him said, you know, I had to go to him at his end and see, would he rather be tortured or give you up? And he would not give his daughter up. So I killed him. And that was a good model for me, like laying one's life down for one's friends and like really loving people so much that you would actually have pain is part of it all. And yes, I want you to get self-care, et cetera, like you just said. But I do think that one irony of the book and movie is that when the male protagonist, the German Hitler Youth Werner, who rises up to become one of the Nazi unfortunate leaders, even though he doesn't want to, he does end up killing a lot of people and doing a lot of destructive things. And at the end, when he finally does something good, he allows himself to realize maybe I've never really lived and made a choice about my life until now. And even though it was a choice that would ultimately lead to his death, I mean, indirectly, it was a better way of living. He's like, oh my gosh, I just made a choice outside of my political sphere to do the right thing. I made a choice and that felt so good. That was really living for him. So making good choices, you might be the only one in your family, the only one in your community, the only one in your marriage, but make a healthy choice because you will never regret that freedom of doing what you knew was right.
That's right. That and that takes a lot of strength. I mean, that is, especially if you've become deeply entrenched in a group, in a culture, in a social, you know, group like that. It's, it could be very powerful, very persuasive. And to overcome that, or to overcome like real deep, you know, habits that we have of thinking or behavior, you know, that are not healthy. That's really, really difficult. And sometimes it takes like supernatural power to overcome it because it's just so strong, you know? And
that's why we have 12-step groups and people like you helping people with medications as needed.
Yeah. Medication can be
God,
helpful.
Of course.
Yeah. Counseling. Yeah. And God, you know, and in the movie, they do a really good job of showing this almost miraculous ability to overcome that. And to be willing to sacrifice, you know, your own life in order to help this girl. You know, it's really, it's incredible. It's so beautiful.
Yes. Oh my gosh. It is.
It's really beautiful. I mean, there's not much more beautiful than that kind of a transformation in somebody, you know?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Oh, you have to see it. You have to read it or see it, depending on your time frame. So we're going to type five people briefly, and we'll each give our opinions on these five. And they are the dad, Daniel LeBlanc, then Marie Laure, the female protagonist, then Werner, the male protagonist, then Uncle Etienne, the radio owner, and then we have his
the
sister.
Professor.
Yeah, he's also called the professor, and then his sister, Madame Manek. We'll start with Madame Manek.
Madame Manek. Okay, so I'm just going to take a stab in the dark, and then you tell me what is the real answer.
No, I'm sure. Not. No, it's okay. I love sitting with it.
Yeah, I'm going to guess maybe she's a nine wing one. Just guessing, you know.
Yeah,
she's really she's very comforting. She's, you know, really loving and supportive as like a motherly role in the house. And but yet she's very smart and she's very resourceful and well organized, very well organized. Needs to be like a nine wing one, you know, so that she can
lead
be
the
able
resistance.
To keep track of those. Yeah, she's like keeping track of all of these resistance communications, you know?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I actually think you typed her better than I did because I had her as a one.
Wow.
But I think that you're right. The diplomatic nine who is so able to merge. She's like, I'm merging with all those people who don't know these German soldiers and I'm getting information through this unobtrusive old ladies society. And so I do think that there's a lot of nine there too. Obviously, huge.
She's just so
maker.
Comforting. Yeah. You know, you just want to give her a big hug.
Yeah, but she's so into the right thing.
Yeah.
And she is
right.
Such a doer. And that's where I have the one is she is such a doer. If you see it, you'll see that. Okay, so now we're going to do Uncle Etienne. And I think he's a five. What about you?
That's a really good question. I mean, he's the professor, you know? And so when he's sharing on his radio program all of these wonderful things from science and yet also blending in this beautiful artistic music for Claire de Lune and helping them to think and dream big. You know, this makes me think like he's a researcher, but yet he's also really in touch with his feelings and his heart and his artistic side. So he holds himself up, you know, for like 20 years in his bat cave, if you will, in the attic, which makes me think like five, you know, but I know that could be just like the PTSD, you
it's
know,
extreme
on top of any
that.
Personality type.
Yeah, but he is a dreamer and he is somebody who's gifted in radio and loves that all the time. So I do see definitely the researcher five. I can't imagine another type, even though of
gotta
course
be five.
It's going to be extreme.
Probably
when we have
four.
Huge trauma overlays from World War One. But yeah,
when he was younger, he said he was somewhat of a dandy.
Yeah, so there's his
at the youth. Wearing cologne and riding a motorcycle.
Yeah.
He was a romantic with the ladies, as a youth, he said. So
yeah, absolutely.
He's probably like a five wing four.
Yeah. And we have to remember this is France where there's a lot of four overlay.
Right.
So they all have a four overlay. Every one of them does. But okay, what do you think about Daniel LeBlanc, Marie's father, who's a locksmith and also the creator of these beautiful models that he makes for his daughter to fly around the city with?
That's a tough one. He's very good at making those models, like super good.
Right.
And he's also like a hero in this. I mean, he's very brave. He's willing to, he comes up with the plan. We need to get out of this city now. He sees it early, you know, he thinks quickly about what can we do with these jewels and this big stone and where do we go? Like, this makes me think six, you know, somebody who's ready with a plan, who's organized with that. They're in charge of the kind of like the security for the museum, the keys
the
for everything.
Yeah, good point.
And and yet he's so brave in standing up for his daughter, being willing to, you know, sacrifice himself like that.
Yeah,
that's all the good things about sixes that I know. Their loyalty, bravery, and yet they're not like fearful, but thoughtful about serious things that could happen and having a plan ready.
Yeah. And I think that you're right with his, the ability to adapt very quickly and to be social is very six. They're part of the dependency triad and they will lean on others as needed. And he went to a house where his uncle lived with his sister, Madame Manek, and he said, "We need help. I'm here." But he also had, like you said, his own layered work and part of the story. Now, I think this is a human layer that we haven't talked much about and we won't take much time on, but I do think he had a fatal flaw law that he couldn't necessarily let go of the jewel of France. I think he was trying to be dependent on the country and hold this huge burden of this huge jewel. But I think his daughter was able to let the stone go appropriately later, whereas he wasn't able to. So I think that there was a bit of greed wrapped into it too, just a little bit. That's his only flaw, is he was holding that jewel. And it was like, for those who aren't familiar with Lord of the Rings, I have to throw in, it was a little bit like holding the ring.
Precious.
That was the one part I was like, why did you do this to this really good World War II historical piece to add in this fantasy? But it was fun. It was a little bit fun to do that. But anyway, I thought he held
it. It wasn't just that he wanted it for himself, but he was saying for France.
Right.
This is the most valuable treasure in all of France. We have to do this for France.
Right.
You
know? That's what I mean. The nationalistic love
kind
of France.
Of a fighter.
It was
He's
a little
a lawyer,
bit. Yes. That's what I mean. The six was definitely seen.
Yeah.
So we could argue all day. Should he have done this?
And his ability to make those models. Like, how many sixes do you know that are really good at making models?
Yeah. Very detailed.
Building Legos.
Yes.
You know,
so true.
Like doing that kind
you
of
have
thing.
A six wing. Yeah. Exactly.
Yes.
Huge. Okay. So we've got him locked in. Locked in. Okay, that was so dorky. All right, go ahead and type maybe my two favorite characters. I think he's my favorite. It's hard to say, but why don't you type Werner?
Warnick?
I'm going to give you stop.
That actor was so good. You're going to probably see him in a lot of movies. He was an excellent actor.
Yeah.
He has such a hard story. Oh my goodness. He starts off as this guy who's like, he's literally a genius at building radios. This, you know, and he's like obsessed with them, always working on them and stuff. So this makes me think not as much like four-ish type of a person or a three or a two. I mean, he seems to me more like a five or a six in that way. He's also someone who really appreciates the professor's broadcasts. He loves to listen to the music and he remembers his poetic artistic expressions about all the light we cannot see and all of the other beautiful things that he says. And so in that sense, it makes me feel like he's really a heart type. So I don't know. I mean, I know this sounds very similar to the other guy, but to me, it sounds a lot like he's probably a five wing four, you know, that sounds like maybe he's supposed to be, maybe he's like a protege of the professor, because you see that in the show.
Yes, and
he's
calls
like
him
his
father. He said,
yeah,
that's my father. I never knew him.
Right.
Yeah.
So he wants to be like him. And they have very similar stories in that they're both, you know, really great at the radio, and they both really appreciate these other ways of using the radio.
Yeah.
So maybe that's intentional. They're both very similar.
Yeah, I think it is. That's a great reminder. And also it's a great reminder to anybody who maybe didn't have a great relationship listening with your father or anybody here, because or mother, where you can find people to mentor you in your community.
Yeah.
And really allow yourself to be blessed by them like he was by him. That's so cool, because he didn't have anybody. And so he needed to rely on a voice he'd never known on the radio. But the truth was, he did get to know him later.
Yes.
And we were giving it all away. So don't worry.
Yeah.
You'll still love watching it, because you already heard
if
him say.
If you haven't seen it.
I already told him everything before he even saw it. And he loved
right.
it.
Exactly.
Okay. Now our final.
I had to see it for myself.
You had to see it. Okay. So, but this is about all the light we can't see. But anyway, so now we're going to do the main character, Marie-Laure LeBlanc.
Marie.
And I had her as a type four.
Type four. Okay. Yes. Well, she is such a beautiful soul, you know, who is really, really listening to people, really trying to really savor everything. You can tell, you can just see that as part of who she is. The way she savors oysters, you know, the way she talks about the sounds of the ocean, you know, in this really artistic way, like it sounds like someone sighing or something, she says, like someone breathing in and out. And, you know, throughout the whole movie, she does that. Those are all like, to me, like very four qualities, you know, she makes really deep connections with everyone, you know, she wants to go there in all of the conversations and talk about feelings and why, you know, people, feel the way they do about things like her uncle, you know, and like our daughters could just get right through. you know, and win them over right away, and she won them over, and so I think that's a really great assessment.
I'm so glad. And I think she represents sort of the heart of France in that way, that she,
The heart of France,
she really has a beautiful, decadent, creative heart that deserves being protected. And oh my
Wow,
gosh, it's just
that's good,
the
Chris.
things that people would shame, she will show you. Don't shame people. It was good. Thank you so much for walking through this with me, Wes.
That was
I
fun.
can't thank you enough.
I
This is
love
the kind
chewing
of
on
thing
it.
I could think about all day. So I'm
Yes.
glad for you guys to be with us too on this episode. Please let me know what you think of it, or if you agree with our typing, or any
Yes.
other insights you got from this. Oh my gosh, I wish we could just do a book club on this. We can't. We don't have the time. But I would if
Watch the
I could.
series, read the
Yes.
book, even just pull it up on Pandora or Spotify and listen to the
Oh, the
soundtrack
soundtrack, it's
while
epic.
you're doing something, you know, while
Yes.
you're doing your paperwork or your chores or whatever it is. It's beautiful.
Yes. Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Yeah,
Thanks
and
for having
maybe we'll
me.
see you another time.
Yes. I hope you'll come back and do another episode with us when we find something else.
Keep shining your lights out there, people. Let it glow.
Thank you guys so much for taking part in this episode as you analyze with us how characters and evil and good all form. Try to make a plan in your mind for something good you're going to do this week. And think about you and your partner, how you have these two circles of influence and what you're good at. And try to think of a way that those circles can become a bit concentric and line up to where you guys can share something together. I think that is a beautiful gift when we can work as a team like those did in the story in the French Resistance and in real life. And I just want you to be able to have that too, where you are not just one cog, but that you're working together with others to make an even more beautiful display of goodness out there. We need it. So thank you so much. Know we have our glow guides. If you ever need a clue about how your pairs work together, or my book, The Enneagram in Marriage, Your Guide to Thriving Together in Your Unique Pairing, make sure you check out the show notes for the free Ennea Summit. And thank you so much for joining for this episode today. It meant the world. Bye-bye.
Thank you again for listening with us. It was so wonderful to have you. I love knowing we're doing this journey together, not perfectly, but with love, grace, and hopefully some fun too. If you love today's episode, make sure you leave us a 5-star review at Apple Podcast or Spotify so others can find it too. Visit our show notes so you can get all the links from today's show, as well as enneagramandmarriage.com, the Instagram, the Facebook, and all over the place. Make sure you spread the word. Love living intentionally with you. Bye-bye.